Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton here with you this afternoon. You guys are in for a real treat. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with the Visus Group, Mr. Tom Kosnick. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's the day after the eclipse, and I am just full of positive energy.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the show. When I first saw that we were going to have a chance to visit, In my mind, I was thinking we would be talking to a staffing company, but no, you're actually consulting too, helping staffing firms produce better results in less time, aren't you?
That's absolutely correct.
Well, I got a ton of questions. We're probably not going to get to them all, Tom, but maybe that's a good place to start is just mission, purpose, what you and your team are really out there trying to do for folks, man.
Yeah, great. We work with the senior leadership of staffing companies, predominantly privately held staffing companies, and it from the outside, it looks like an easy industry, but Stone, you've got candidates and contract employees that walk and talk and have their idiosyncrasies, and you have clients that walk and talk and have their idiosyncrasies, and these staffing companies are really the mediator between those two entities. It's the only business where the product that you're representing is a live person. And so the staffing, we help staffing companies grow, and we have about 120 active staffing businesses across the United States and Canada. And it's great work.
Well, it sounds like noble and probably lucrative work if you can get it. But I got to know what's the backstory, man? How in the world did you find yourself doing this kind of work for these kind of people?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was making a career change, and I connected my father-in-law, who's a serial entrepreneur. He introduced me to a gentleman out of Cincinnati that taught in some of the business schools, and he was managing a small peer-to-peer roundtable program. And he was interested in expanding, and but he wasn't interested in managing people. So we struck a deal, and he taught me how to develop these roundtables, these peer-to-peer roundtables. And at that point, the staffing industry was growing at 12% a year. And off we went. And 3 years later, we had over 100 staffing companies and 8 or 10 different peer roundtables that I was facilitating. And that's all we did at that time was manage the peer roundtables. And today, now we have president roundtables, CFO roundtables, CRO roundtables, and CMO roundtables. No dull moment. So it was a career change, and just worked the network and lucked into it. And here we are today.
Well, I am genuinely intrigued with this peer-to-peer learning, discovery, growth model. Can you speak to the virtues, the advantages of a peer-to-peer model for people who are trying to accomplish more?
Our clients tell us that the most effective learning that they can get, and we do have a lot of clients that read books and take classes and do things online. But they tell us that the most effective way that they learn how to grow their business is peer learning. And that is people that are in the same industry, that have tried certain things, have accomplished certain goals, have climbed certain mountains, and to learn from that experience is invaluable. And that's one side of the coin. And the other side of the coin is what we do, how we break open these questions, these topics, these issues, these challenges that the men and women that own and manage these businesses have, and trying to get them to see things differently. So Stone, the Einstein said, you cannot solve a problem at the same by thinking at the problem the same way you've been thinking. So you really have to change the way that you think about the problem in order to come up with a creative solution.
So it's certainly one thing to get a group of people like that together. And even if we got them together over a glass of bourbon, there's probably something good that would come out of it. But for you to do your work, there must be structure, methodology, rigor, discipline around all this. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of our differentiators is that we facilitate through a creative problem solving process. There are a lot of really good peer-to-peer roundtables and things like that. But what differentiates us is the creative problem-solving process that we facilitate through. And the way that works, it's a little bit of a touch of organizational development, but Arthur Van Gundy, who was the grandfather of creative problem-solving, he taught at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, and I was trained by him, and he connected me with a bunch of his associates that taught me all kinds of great things about creative problem solving. But it's really a process of allowing somebody to unpack an issue, and then for the rest of us that are in the room to ask questions, you know, the five-level deep questioning, tell me more about that. Tell me more about that. Tell me more about that. And Stone, here's what we never talk about. And this applies to your life with your kids, your spouse, your business associates, anything that you're trying. I want to lose weight. I want to run a marathon. We have certain assumptions about the way that the world works, about the way that men and women relate, about the economy, about employees, about how sales are done. And in order to get somebody to resolve an issue at a different level, we have to ask questions, good questions, deep enough where we get those unspoken assumptions out on the table. And if once those assumptions come out on the table, then the person who is in the batter's box, so to speak, that's trying to resolve an issue or trying to get past an issue, if we get those assumptions out on the table and then put those assumptions under the microscope, and if we can get them to change those assumptions, two things happen. One, the whole construct of what they're trying to achieve changes. They see the world differently, and they behave differently towards the problem. And ultimately, you've heard it. How many times do people try to solve a problem by doing the same thing that they've always done before? And it's human nature. But the reason that one of the reasons that is because they are operating under the same unspoken assumptions that they have about how the world and business and people work together. And so that's what we do at the roundtable. And many, many, many times, the business owners that are with us say that phase of our creative problem discussion where people are asking really deep, thoughtful, moving questions becomes even more important than somebody telling me, well, I did this and these were the results. And if I were in your shoes, I would do that. They tell us that's almost more important than getting actual responses from other attendees in the group.
So I have an observation from admittedly very limited experience in some kind of group setting where, you know, a small group of us, we're genuinely trying to help another person think through through their challenges. Well, a couple of observations. One, we didn't have to be geniuses about their thing. We just kind of made it easier for them to talk about and ask themselves some questions. So that was one observation that was kind of revealing for me. But also, I came away from that, even though the purpose of that period of time was to help Bill, I felt like I came away from it better too. Like my thinking was more crystallized, solidified in my, it made me that much better of a practitioner in my cases. Is that something that you see a lot? Is that a unique experience?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are some times where people come to the round table and they may not have an issue at all, yet they come up to me at the end and say, "Tom, this was the best round table I've been to in the last 5 years." Because they learned something, somebody else had an issue that they may have not even realized was an issue for their business also. And then of course their mind is reeling. And then look, we do want to help people. So most individuals do want to help each other. And there's that sense of giving and that sense of building community and the sense of helping one another that really is not an ego, but just a good human development sort of thing. And I should say the other piece of it, Stone, is the what we call the leadership development piece of it. And that is that, of course you're going to be thinking about things differently, you know, upon your departure. But the leadership development is that one is developing as a leader. One is growing. One is developing particular competencies about, so for example, I have a client that's been in the round table for, you know, maybe 12 years. And he recently shared with me, I'm really trying to slow down, really understand what's going on in my business and just observe and ask much better questions, not only of myself, but my key reports so that we can not just make a decision, but that we can make a prudent decision that's not just based on hearsay, not based on emotion, not based on solely on fact, but just good, solid decision making. So there's that dynamic of leadership development that happens as a result of these peer groups as well.
So now that you've been at this a while, what's the most rewarding? What's the most fun about it for you?
You would think that after 30 years of facilitating these roundtables, that I would be bored and would want to move on. But it's more exciting now than it has ever been, because things are changing so fast. But the most rewarding is really to see our clients develop and grow and become the leaders that they were called to become. And it's a very great thing when, you know, a company that's got 350 employees or 525 employees, you know, as that company grows and becomes more profitable, there's more opportunity all the way down from the leader down. So we're really affecting opportunity for, you know, all those individuals within that organization, and it's a very honorable thing to be a part of.
You must sleep very well at night, because I mean, clearly you're doing important work, and I'm sure it's financially lucrative. But I get the sense that a great deal of your comp package is what I would characterize as emotional compensation.
yeah, that would be fair. That would be fair to say. That'd be fair to say.
So how does the whole sales and marketing thing work for a guy like you, a practice like yours that is as mature as it is? Do you still find yourself out there with a need for a systemic methodology or strategy for getting new clients? Does stuff just come in over the transom?
Absolutely. I mean, methodology, discipline, there's freedom and discipline, right? So we have two selling methodologies, one for we're bringing in new roundtable guests to find out if they would make for a good member in a roundtable program. And then we also do a lot of consulting, organizational development consulting work. And so that's a different, and it all starts with knowing the ideal client, knowing the buyer persona, knowing the buyer journey, not getting ahead of ourselves or too far behind ourselves in terms of that there's alignment between, the buyer journey and what we're presenting to the buyer. And then managing that, having a CRM and doing things on LinkedIn and doing posts and social media, all those, you really have to have some kind of a game plan and a methodology and consistent execution. That's where unfortunately, a lot of companies, they get going on something and then it goes by the wayside but consistency is the big thing. Consistent and persistent.
Sounds like you've been reading my mail because, my business partner, Lee, and I, we run the Business Radio X Network, and we'll latch on to something, a methodology, a framework, and it works so well, we stop doing it,
Yeah. Right? How is it? How does that happen, right? Right. It's funny. Well,
speaking of methodology and framework, you've kind of handcrafted and refined your own model for the OD work, right? The organizational development work. I'm operating under the impression you establish and execute on that model, but you're probably at a point now where you've also got to bring on other people that can execute that without
correct
too much dilution.
Yeah. We'll get involved in strategic planning, financial analysis, some mergers and acquisitions work, compensation development, interim CFO, interim sales manager, but that's not me. I was 3 years into this and I decided to get a master's in organizational development from Bowling Green State University, which is in the top three organizational development programs in the country. We have over 100 independently owned companies as clients. They all have challenges and issues and things that we can help them with. We have people that have competencies and expertise in certain ways, whether that's valuation work, whether that's interim sales management, whether that's coaching CFO, whether that's looking at a tech stack, whether that's doing an internal assessment on the business overall. Like all those projects, we have people on staff that are executing on those. So it's a good spot to be in.
It sounds like you're able to keep the work fresh, and at the same time, I gotta believe that you must run into some patterns, I guess. Like and maybe you don't vocalize that just yet, this early in the conversation with them, but you're thinking to yourself, "Yep, I've seen this one."
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although every time I say I've seen it all, sure enough, something gets said or something gets shown to me. I'm like, wow, I thought I'd seen it all, but that's, I've never seen that. There are some similarities. And I would say, the plateaus that, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that start a business and they hit a plateau, and there are various levels of plateaus. There's the owner operator that it gets in his own way or cannot delegate or doesn't believe in methodologies and processes. And then there's the middle market guys, the guys that are too big to be small, but too small to be big. And they get what we call stuck in the middle. And then they start stagnating at 50 million or 80 million in revenue. And they can't seem to grow past that. And the funny thing is that oftentimes they make the same mistakes. Stone, all I need is one more rainmaker. I just need to hire the lucky charm. And then somebody comes by who says, I'm the rainmaker and my salary needs to be 150K and I need to make 350,000 and I want a guarantee in the first year. And a lot of entrepreneurs fall for that. And then a year later, there's no deals closed.
Yeah. Another year and a half million dollars later.
And another common mistake is these businesses will go out and hire a president that came from a much larger organization. Well, if they were in that kind of an organization, they can come in and teach us how to go from here to there. But, you know, companies are made up of people. Every company has a different culture. Every company has a different mission and vision that they're trying to accomplish. And a lot of times the execs that are coming from those big companies, they actually didn't build anything. They got on board after the business was a certain size, and they may have a lot of competencies in a lot of areas. But when it comes to, well, how do you take the business from 50 million to a half a billion? They've never done that before. So I see that. That's another common error that business owners will make as they're trying to grow the business. But yeah, we do see a lot of commonality in some of these things.
Well, with your pedigree, your experience base, and I dare say maybe some scar tissue that you can call up when needed, I got to believe you're called on to speak. Do you find yourself on the dais talking to companies, associations, as a professional speaker?
Sure. Yeah, we speak at state associations, national associations. We do a lot of podcasts like this. We do quite a bit of that work. Yeah.
Well, the reason I'm asking is I'm curious to know, like, when you started speaking in front of large groups, and you've got this depth of knowledge, did it take you a while to figure out how to distill it to where it would be very beneficial for that short time period, but set the foundation to go do some real work at the opportunity presented itself? Like, what was it like? What kind of shifts, if any, do you have to make when you're speaking as opposed to facilitating? Because I think there is a pretty good distinction there, right?
Oh, the first, when I first started speaking, I was terrible. Terrible. A good friend of mine, I did a short stint. It was like a 15-minute thing, and I thought I did well. So I asked an associate of mine, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you rate me? He rated me like a 4.
Ouch.
Like 4. And, well, you know, tell me why you rated me a 4. And so then I went and got a coaching for speaking coaching. And it was the best money I ever spent. And I try to invest in myself, try to develop, every year. There's certain things that I'm trying to learn or get better at. And so I'll either invest in a class or a coach or a program. So anyway, I went ahead and found a speaking coach. And my gosh, you just don't know what you don't know. Mm. You don't know all the mistakes that you're making. And she continues to be a tremendous help. She's helped me with speaking in front of groups of people, developing the outlines, the execution, and not just like in front of groups of people, but when I'm on camera, on video, when I'm doing these kinds of things, she really has educated me tremendously. So that was my experience.
Well, what a marvelous reminder, and I think important piece of counsel for anybody who's listening out there. I don't care how accomplished you are, the good ones, the great ones, man, they continue getting coaching and they're life learners. And just,
that's the Stephen Covey, right? Always be sharpening the saw.
Yeah.
There's a great, you can put, I don't know if you have notes in your podcast, but there's a HBR, Harvard Business Review, paper that was written. And I can't remember the author's name right now, but the title of it is The Power to See ourselves, the power to see ourselves. And it is, it was written back in 1962. And Stone, let me tell you, if you read it, you would say, this is so applicable to today, to every executive out there. And it just, it really talks about taking ownership of my own development, becoming a professional leader, a professional manager, and that whole process. And there's too much in that article for me to kind of go into, but it, yeah, it's such a great read. Such a great read.
Well, believe me when I tell you, I'm going to read it. But speaking of reading, is there a book in you? Do you have any designs on writing a book?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to. Yes. In fact, I've got a little project going on right now. Once we get through that, I have an editor. Once I get through that, I've got a couple more ideas, but I'm hoping to be able to get a little bit more published. I've been published in magazines and things like that, but a book, I'd love to. Some of my lessons learned, I've got a handful of ideas that I want to process. So I'm on the front end of that one, Stone.
Well, I look forward to reading that and following this story. And if you're up for it, when you get ready to release that, let's have you back on the show and talk about it.
Yeah, would love to. I'd love to.
All right, what's the best way for our listeners to tap into your work, touch base, have a conversation with you or someone on your team?
You can look us up on LinkedIn or on the internet. We've got all the contact information and ways to reach us. The website is Visus Group. That's V like Victor, ISUS Group, GROUP.com. And you can also find us on LinkedIn. We post pretty regularly on LinkedIn. We've got a page, a Visus Group page on LinkedIn, and I'm on LinkedIn. It's such a great tool for us.
Well, it has been an absolute delight to have you on the show, man. I really appreciate you sharing your insight and your perspective. You're doing really important work, and we sure appreciate you, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you saying so.
My pleasure. All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for our guest today, Tom Kosnick with Visus Group, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.